labor was, and they put on the belt incorrectly. So I went through labor and into transition by myself, alone, in the dark, in the middle of the night, all night long, by myself. I went through labor by myself. And I kept asking the nurse, as things got more and more difficult and more painful, if I should get some support, if I should call my husband, if I should start using my breathing techniques. And she said, "Oh, no, honey. No, you've barely started. It's going to get a lot worse than this." And I remember thinking, how am I going to do this? I can't take it if it gets worse than this. How bad is it going to get? It was already pretty bad. And I think of that every time I read this passage and I hear Jesus talking about all of these cataclysmic events. And then he says, yeah, this is just the beginning. And I look at the world around me, as many of you may be doing these things these days. And I look at what's happening and I think, how bad can it get? How much worse can it get? How can we tell what this all means? I mean, it seems like it's been as bad as it can be forever, and then it gets a little bit worse. And I don't know if any of you had the same grandma I had, but I remember when I was a little kid hearing my grandma talk about the way the world was going and saying, "I'm just glad I won't be around to see it." And I thought, how can you say that? How can you want to not be alive? How can you say that? Now that I'm an adult and I see the pain and the grief, I understand my grandma a little bit better. Because how much worse can it get? Jesus offers these words that come to us in the Gospel of Mark. This is known as the mini apocalypse, by the way, in the Gospel of Mark. And it's always a challenge to read these words because it's hard for us to understand what it is he's trying to say. I mean, do we read these words? Do we read them as warning or do we read them as hope? Do we read them as threat or do we read them as promise? Because the awkward truth about apocalyptic literature is it is written for hope, not for threat. I was raised up to read it as a threat. When I first became a Christian in high school and was introduced to some of this apocalyptic literature, there was definitely a warning. You know, you better get your faith right because the end is coming. And it was a scary thing. But that's not why it was written. It wasn't written to scare us into the right faith. It wasn't written to scare us straight, as it were. It was written to be hope. Now, what kind of hope is that? This promise that the temple is going to be torn down. This magnificent, wonderful, beautiful center of worship and community life for the Jewish people living under Roman oppression. The center of everything that represented who they were. And Jesus says it's going to get torn down. How is that hopeful? Well, it's pretty important for us to connect these texts with the text we heard last week. It's part of the same conversation where Jesus talks about the widow who takes her last two coins and puts them in the temple treasury. Because what Mark wants us to remember, what Jesus wanted us to remember, is that beautiful temple, which was important to the lives of so many people, the center of worship, the center of their identity, was built on the backs of poor widows who gave their last coins to it. The backs of people who lost their homes because of debt, and whose resources went into the temple treasury. Even that gift to the people, that mark of comfort and strength and identity and security for the people of God, was built on the backs of the poor. So is its destruction good news or bad news? When we hear Jesus' apocalyptic words, how we hear those words have a lot to do with where we're standing, how things are going in our lives. You know, when we are at that place in our lives where we feel like we've finally gotten our act together, like things have finally settled in, we've We finally know where we're going and we know where we want to be and everything is working right. The destruction of everything sounds pretty awful. It's ultimate change, and change is hard enough on its own. But the destruction of everything we've worked for and built for, that sounds terrible. But if you're in a different place where everything you've hoped and worked for has already been shattered, the words sound a little different. When you've received the diagnosis you didn't want, when you got the pink slip, when you hear finally the confirmation that your loved ones are gone in that horrible fire, when everything that you have hoped for and longed for and built and believed about your world, when everything has been torn away, these are words of hope. Because what they tell us is what we already know to be true, that that which we build, that which we believe about ourselves, that which we have accomplished, all of this will die. Mark's readers knew it because when Mark wrote his gospel, that temple had already been destroyed in the rebellion. Rome had already pulled it down by the time Mark wrote this gospel. And he remembered Jesus' words. And he held them up for a people living in desolation and the loss of their hope. And he says to them in these words, it's all right. Not that it's all right in the way that we usually think of that. But what Mark is saying, what Jesus is telling us is everything that we have built, everything that we are, everything of this mortal world, it will all die. Our bodies will age. We will fail. Our buildings will someday crumble. There is devastation and havoc all around us. There is war. There are natural disasters. There are cataclysms we do not understand. It's all here, and it's been here forever, beloved. It has always been thus. And God is present in the midst of it. See, this is the word of hope. The word of hope is understood finally when we have lost everything that we pin our hopes on that is not God. When we've lost everything we pin our hopes on that is not God, then we understand the promise of apocalyptic literature, which says to God's people, even though the world is in chaos, I am your God, and I have a word to speak to you. And that word is beloved. You are my beloved. You are my beloved. And there is no war, no empire, no fire, and no cataclysm that can change that. Now, the thing about being named God's beloved is that unlike what we like to think will happen, it does not save us from catastrophe. It does not prevent the fire from hitting our home. It does not prevent us from losing our job. It does not prevent the stage 4 diagnosis. Faithfulness is not measured by the absence of grief in our lives. God's love for us is not measured by the absence of struggle. That's not how God works. But God's promise is this, that when we're wondering how bad can it get and how much more can I take, God's word to us is always, I have you. I have you. And the struggle of this mortal world is not the sign that I don't love you. I am with you. And all of these things, they are all part of what it means to be human. They are all part of what it means to be mortal. This past Monday, at the celebration of resurrection for Amy Gerhart, I mentioned the dilemma we face when a 23-year-old dies. And the things that we know are absolutely true are this. We are incredibly fragile. Life is incredibly unfair. And it really hurts a lot. It's filled with wonder and joy and good things as well. but it is also filled with the pain and the fear. And the apocalyptic promise, the promise of Mark and the other apocalyptic literature, is that the end of all things drawing nigh does not mean just simply the destruction of all that we hold dear, but it means an end to all of the ways of humanity that continue to work pain and grief in this world. It means an end to the systems of injustice that we participate in, even though we wish we didn't, that work harm we don't even know we are doing. It means an end to the struggles of a society that cannot figure out how to follow God and the establishment of the reign of God in its fullness. It means an end to the pain of how can this possibly get any worse? It's hope that God's mercy and love outlast everything else. When Jesus offers this vision and Mark writes it down so that we will have it 2,000 years later, when we think things have gotten as bad as they can possibly get, which was exactly what Mark's readers thought, when we read these words, we remember that God is faithful to us in the midst of this. Now, we don't get the next part of the reading in the lectionary this morning, but when Jesus reminds his people, all of this that you have created, it will not hold on to you, but God will. Then he reminds his followers that they have a calling, that we have a calling. And our calling is not to believe that if God loves us, we will be able to escape the suffering. The calling is to testify. Testify. He sends his followers to testify. And he warns them that it won't be easy. He warns them, you're going to get arrested. You're going to get executed by the authorities. Bad stuff is still going to happen. But beloved, we are called to testify, not to frighten people into the loving arms of God with the fear of damnation and torture, but to testify to God's mercy and love in the midst of pain and suffering and loss, to testify to compassion, to testify for love for those who are hurting, to testify for respect and mercy in a world that is constantly overwhelmed by confusion and pain, by war and wildfires, by famine and fear, a world that threatens with being overwhelmed with darkness, we are called to testify to the light. Whether we live or whether we die, beloved, we are called to testify. That rhymes. I didn't even mean that. But we are. Whether we live or whether we die, we're called to testify. How do you do that? Well, we love boldly. We show compassion. We demonstrate respect. We give mercy. We forgive. We confess. We talked about confession in the Adult Forum confirmation class. We confess our brokenness, not because we're evil people, even though I don't know about you personally, I often am. But we confess because it is a testimony to God's faithfulness to us. We can confess our brokenness because we trust in God's promise of love and mercy. And our very brokenness and our very testimony of confession of sin testifies to God's goodness and mercy. So do our acts of compassion. So do every decision we make where we see another person in front of us. Our calling in a world overwhelmed with darkness is to hurl that testimony against the darkness as light and hope. Because the evil and the brokenness and the hurt will not have the last word. And we are the proof of it. We are the proof of it when we offer mercy. We are the proof of it when we give compassion and solace. We are the proof of it when we bear one another's pain, even though it would be easier to be comfortable somewhere else than having our hearts broken by the suffering of our neighbor. We testify by being present in this world, stubbornly, persistently proclaiming grace, mercy, respect, love, healing, and hope. How much worse can it get? Well, I don't know if there's an answer to that. I don't know what the answer is. But I know that no matter how bad it gets, at the end of all things, at the end of all things stands that which is at the beginning, the Alpha, the Omega, the creating God who calls us, along with quarks and quasars and all of the cosmos, who calls us into life at the beginning and at the end. The God who calls us beloved and calls us into life. And so we're here to testify. Do that this week, beloved. If you need hope in the face of the pain and the sorrow and the fear that permeates the news cycle every day, if you need hope, then I invite you to testify. Go out and testify in spite of the hurt. Go out and testify in spite of the hatefulness. Go out and testify in spite of the bomb threats and in spite of the shooters and in spite of the hunger. Go out and testify to compassion and presence and mercy and love. And you'll find hope. It's at the beginning and at the end of everything. Thanks be to God.